Support for Talking Art on WVIK comes from the people at Quad City Bank and Trust, helping the local community with their banking and financial needs for more than 20 years. Information is at qcbt.com. Support also comes from the estate of Margaret Skinner, a longtime friend of WVIK and lover of the arts.
This is Carolyn Martin, and I'm talking art today with Catherine Procht, a mezzo-soprano opera singer originally from Davenport who has an extensive performance history. She made her Kennedy Center debut as soloist in Philip Glass's Symphony No. 5 with the Washington Chorus in 2016. She's performed at Carnegie Hall and at numerous other venues, both nationally and internationally. She recently performed the title role in Elizabeth Cree at the Chicago Opera Theater, which concluded in February. Welcome, Katie.
Hi there. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thanks so much for talking. You have so many accomplishments with a very long bio. And how did someone from the Quad Cities end up in opera performance? What was your journey like?
That's a great question. I actually, my mother is a singer as well. Becky Procht is her name. And she introduced me and my siblings to the love of music at home. I think the first opera I ever heard was on a VHS of an opera, Simone Boccanegra, that she was playing at home. And I thought it was dark and boring, and I didn't want to have anything to do with it. And I overheard her, you know, over the years, she would play and she would sing. She plays piano and she would sing at home. And it was funny. The, my siblings and I would kind of hear her singing with vibrato, and we would kind of make fun of her. And it was something that, you know, was foreign and didn't sound anything like the pop music that we were used to hearing. And then I'm not sure exactly what turned. I think at a certain point I was actually, this tells you my age. I was watching Johnny Carson right before things kind of switched over to another host. But Kiri Takanawa, this fabulous opera soprano, she was singing an aria on his show, and I heard it and I thought, oh my goodness, this is magic, and this is something that I want to do. And I didn't realize that I was being prepared for the path by hearing my mother sing and by being around classical music. She also was a long, long time member of Nova Singers. She's been on the board, but she also was an alto in their chorus. Nova Singers is a big, important choral group in the area.
Yes. And they do great work.
They really do. They're a very important presence in the choral community. And I grew up, you know, once in a while I'd get to go to rehearsals and I'd kind of play board games in the back and listen to this choral music. And so the choral music presentation in my life and the history and that I kind of was surrounded with, it just kind of all seeped in. And so when I heard this opera aria being sung on TV, I kind of realized, wow, this is something that I actually am interested in doing. And I loved the sound of it. And I went to college at University of Iowa, and I was studying voice because it was something that I always kind of was able to do. I could always sing. I was a member in my mother's church choir at St. Mary's in Davenport. I could always do it in school. It was something that came easily to me. Actually, all of my siblings, we all sing well. We all played pitched instruments. My mom insisted that we all learn how to read music and play pitched instruments growing up.
And you were one of quite a few siblings.
Yeah, that's right. There are seven of us. Mm-hmm. I have an older brother. I'm second oldest, and then I have two younger sisters and three younger brothers. Mm-hmm. So it's a pile of people, and we all kind of, you know, can make this great, lovely band if we choose to pick up instruments or sing. And that was another tradition in our family, in our extended family, on my mom's side. We all kind of would gather around at Christmas time and sing together, or any holiday, really. The opera path kind of developed itself while I was at school at University of Iowa. I majored in classical vocal performance, and I was invited to sing in some opera scenes. And I wasn't really interested at first. I thought I was going to go into music theater and sing musicals instead, but I was encouraged to go ahead and give the opera scenes a try, and I discovered that I could act the way I wanted to, just like I did in, I wanted to in music theater. I was invited to act as an opera singer as well. And then, you know, just it turned out that my voice happened to be suited to opera. And so, that's kind of where the path took off from.
Right. Mm-hmm. You were raised in Davenport and went to Davenport Central. What was your music education like prior to going to the University of Iowa? And were you involved in theater and other art forms there?
Yeah, I did. In third grade, I started playing the flute. So I played flute all the way through my high school career as well. I sang in anything I could get into. So it was mostly choral training. I was in the choruses when I was growing up. Sally Rewerts was a choral teacher at Davenport Central. That was kind of a big growth place for me. It was a place where I learned how to really lock into hearing harmony in my ear and to kind of trust my voice and to sing out. Mr. Bernatz was our band teacher, and I got a lot of fabulous training in marching band and playing flute there. I was in Allstate as well, and I got brave in trying to, you know, learn new solos that I thought were interesting for me, and that showed a range of performing, you know, ability, the language, and difficulty. And my mom was my voice teacher at the time. So, and I was not a great student. I have to say this. I know she'll hear this interview. And I have to say, I was not a great student. She tried to teach me piano when I was little, and I just refused to sit still and practice. And so, she was flexible, and that was lovely of her. I really regret not having paid more attention then. It would be fabulous to be a great pianist now. But I think it was a lot of just kind of slow, steady preparation through choral music, which I think is so important in the schools. Mm-hmm. And also doing it extracurricularly. Does that answer your question? I'm not sure.
Absolutely. No, it sounds like you had a great platform once you left, once you had a great base once you left Davenport to kind of move on. And after you received your undergraduate degree in music from the University of Iowa, then you obtained your master's degree at the University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. But then from that point, how did you jump into getting roles? How was it that you were able to be cast in these roles? And what was that audition process like and that next step like for you?
I did a lot at the University of Iowa just I took whatever anybody would give me. And I think that's pretty much the key of doing this, the transition into going from school and going into performing professionally. I sang Marcellina in The Marriage of Figaro, and I sang Zita in Johnny Skeeky. Those are two old woman roles, and I sang them when I was an undergrad. But it was great for my acting chops and gave me a chance to perform on stage. And then my master's degree, I had, a lot of really good training as well, vocally, just doing voice lesson training and learning art songs and performing recital. But then I had an opportunity at the Skylight Opera Theater, which is this small, kind of a jewel box opera theater in Milwaukee, where they gave me a shot at doing a small role. And I won a debut artist award there. And then they kept hiring me back. Which was, great fun, because then all of a sudden I could feel like a professional despite my youth. And so I kept working there, and I would, get brave and do auditions like the Metropolitan Opera has these national auditions. And so I would go and just kind of throw my hat in the ring and audition. And I won district level a couple of times, which was great, and I was able to go on and compete in a larger venue. And I never won, but it was great for me to just get out there and see how I compared on a national level. I decided after I'd won a couple times in that region, I went down to San Antonio just to see how I compared with people, you know, outside of my region. Mm-hmm. And I went to, where did I go? St. Louis. I went somewhere else to just see, you know, how did I compete there? And it was fun. I always did well. And so, like, that was part of my kind of breaking out a little bit and trying to be brave. The audition process, apart from competitions, the audition process is, it's a challenge, you know? It's, I think the good thing is that I had a lot of dedicated teachers and I had dedication myself, you know, where I wanted to practice as much as possible and learn things that were appropriate for my voice so that I could, you know, stop thinking about the singing when I'm actually doing the audition and focus more on the delivery of the text mm-hmm. and the kind of character that I wanted to convey and try to figure out through a lot of coaching with stage directors even how to be comfortable in my body when I'm in that really, really high pressure situation where I'm singing and there are two people looking at me and it's in this kind of, you know, big, it's not a boardroom, but it's a kind of, you know, small auditorium or something even more, just kind of plain, where it's not this big theater, but it's really kind of a rehearsal room where I'm not getting any feedback. I don't have anybody else to perform with on stage, and I just have a couple people who are looking at me or aren't. You know, they're taking notes or something. And trying to create art in that situation can be really, really difficult.
Oh, it sounds so intimidating.
Yeah, yeah. And you think, you know, how can I beat everybody else? You know, by doing this. And so I discovered in my own, you know, version of it, it's, you know, how can I be as committed as possible to what I'm singing, and really love, you know, sing my heart and soul into what I'm into the music that I'm putting out right now, so that no matter what, even if I don't win the audition, I can feel great about my delivery mm-hmm. and I can feel happy for having sung it that day.
Yeah. That's a great lesson for just life in general for majority of us, really. When you were in training, how many foreign languages were you encouraged or required to learn? Because so many of the operas are performed in a different language, Italian or German. Or what were the requirements for that? And do you feel proficient in more languages than just, you know, your native English?
Yeah, I think, it was absolutely required in my undergrad and in my master's degree. To have German, Italian, and French diction, and then also in my undergrad, you also had to take language. So my French was always easier for me. I studied that in junior high and high school, and then I took it up for a couple of years in my undergrad as well. But German, my last name is Pracht, you know, that should be my language, because it's a German last name, but that was always a little bit more intimidating for me, but I found, you know, they require, schools definitely require you to learn, languages, to learn arias in German, French, Italian, and English. And then you can choose, a fifth selection. In just normal opera auditions, you can choose a fifth selection. You can repeat a language or you can do a different one. Strangely, I'm doing a lot of, I'm doing several pieces in Russian in the next coming season. So that was something that I did not prepare for. And so then in that situation, there are vocal coaches whose job it is to help you prepare in the language. And then they also generally play the piano. And so they can help you, double check the notes that you're singing, but make sure that you can be, that you're singing the right vowels and consonants and just general sounds, and being understood in that language as best as possible. And so there's a fabulous, in Philadelphia, there's a great, Russian coach, whom I take things to.
And you're living in Philadelphia, we should mention right now.
Yes, currently. That's right.
Well, there are so many demands on you, you know, besides just singing, obviously, the ability to learn or to be able to have correct diction in all those languages is a challenge. And then also you're required to be skilled at acting, because the best operatic performers are good at that as well. Did you receive any specific training or teaching along the way with acting?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's really where I love to live. I think the greatest, every teacher has thought that was important, and doing opera scenes is a wonderful place for young singers to get started, just practicing, you know, doing more than just thinking about singing. You have to accept the fact that there are people around you, and it's lovely to kind of let go of the pressure of making gorgeous sounds and to just kind of have a little bit of fun and to really get into the scene. You can share that pressure with the others that are up there on stage with you. I think the best acting training I ever had was with a wonderful stage director named Paula Swazi. She's now at the Met, and she's a director. I think she kind of runs direction at the Met. I should have looked up her job title before I started talking about her. But I met her at Skylight Opera Theater in Milwaukee. That was that first show that I did after my master's degree. And she really just encouraged the instincts that I already had for expressing text just kind of interpreting a character and what the person was thinking and feeling, you know, what I was thinking and feeling while I was singing the role. And she just encouraged me, you know, to make it a little bit bigger and to make it a little more flexible and to kind of, you know, consider the fact that I'm going to be singing to a house of, you know, between 300 and 2,500 people in the audience. You know, how do you keep the integrity of what you're saying, even if what you're saying is something really general or rather gentle and vulnerable? How do you sing that kind of intimacy in an honest way to 2,500 people who can barely see you on stage? And so, like, I had really, really good instruction and feedback from her especially. And I've worked with some very talented stage directors since then who have encouraged me to, you know, do simple things like keep what I'm doing and the integrity of what I'm doing, but also get my face pointed out so that my voice can be heard a little bit more, because, you know, if I'm really committing to singing to somebody on stage with me, but my face is pointing to the curtains on the side of the stage, pointing to the wings, you know, it's just difficult for the audience to hear me. And so there are little tricks that you have to learn along the way to make sure that you are engaging on stage with the people that you're singing with, but also thinking about the person in the last top row in the audience who wants to hear and see everything.
Right. There are so many nuances to what you do. You just finished performing the title role in Elizabeth Cree at the Chicago Opera Theater in Chicago, and that did receive great reviews. The Chicago Tribune said this: Catherine Procht brought a mezzo of size and quality and confident dramatic presence to the complicated title role. And that was such a lovely compliment.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. I've been very incredibly happy and rewarded by the. I'm always happy when the way I feel about an opera lines up with the way an audience feels about mm-hmm. it.
Describe for us what your typical day is like when you're performing in a production like you were in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Those must be long days and must be incredibly hectic.
Well, it's funny because when we're actually into performance, things get very calm because the main presentation is, you know, generally in the evening, unless you've been a matinee. But in the weeks prior, we're doing, you know, 6 hours a day of rehearsal, and that's when the hectic part is. You know, when you're making sure that you know all the notes, you're doing all of the interviews, you're doing the kind of, you know, rehearsal and staging of the opera. And so the performances, the days of performance, you know, is mostly about getting as much sleep as I'm able to, trying to get a good warm-up in a vocal warm-up. But also, you know, there's a lot of time to kind of fill and how to not wear myself out. I discovered over many, you know, years of trial and error that I, although I would love to go to, you know, a museum on my days off or even on the day of, I've discovered that when I take in that much stimulation from art, I get overwhelmed, and so then my brain is not in the show that night. I'm thinking about, you know, I'm thinking about the audience. I'm thinking about taking things into my brain, you know, from what I'm seeing out there on the stage, in the theater. And so I kind of do a little bit more just keeping to myself on days of performance so that I can really be in the show and give as much as possible from the stage perspective out to the mm-hmm. audience, as opposed to being aware of everybody else, yeah. That who's watching me, you know. But yeah, it's, you know, trying to stay healthy is the trick.
Well, especially through the winter months, I would guess, with your voice,
yeah.
you'd have to be
yeah.
so careful and, yeah. you know, you were talking 6 hour days, that must really strain your voice. And, you know, you alluded to the fact that the busy time really is the time leading up to the start of the performances. So, like, once the casting is made, how long do you typically have before the performances begin? Then what's that segment like?
It's interesting because it depends. It used to be that opera theaters would book singers 2-3 years in advance. That's when they knew what their budgets were going to be. They could make advanced planning about what the operas were going to be for their seasons. And then, you know, for the really famous singers, you have to they're going to be booked up really quickly, and so they had to plan, you know, out really far to try to get them to hook up with their own companies. But budgets get tight these in this last decade, especially. Budgets have gotten a lot tighter, and so people, opera companies, don't get to necessarily plan ahead as far as they'd like to. And so, you know, more and more, I still get contracts within the year or a year in advance. And that's, in the opera world, it's not very much time to prepare a role, especially if you're performing a lot, because, for instance, if I'm performing Elizabeth Cree, but I have another opera coming up, which is new, I have to be learning that opera while I'm in rehearsal, for Elizabeth Cree. And so, you know, there's just not a lot of time to rest the voice or, you know, your mind. And it's difficult if you've got, you know, a language, opera in a different language, that you're trying to prepare. And, it can just be really, confusing, like, which show am I doing today? And I think, there's a really interesting thing. I went to, I was auditioning in Europe, and I was considering auditioning for a fest. I was auditioning for a fest contract, and those people it's amazing. Like, they will perform, you know, one opera during the daytime and another opera at night, and then the next day is a totally different opera. Doesn't, you know, whatever the opera's language is, that's what you do that day. And it's just talk about creating stamina. That's the major thing. Mm-hmm. I think now I've gotten a little off track.
Well,
but I think
you were talking about the stamina that it requires, which yeah. really is pretty remarkable, because your travel schedule is daunting. And it sounds like there is so much prep going into each production that if you have a tight schedule, it would be, you know, it would be quite a challenge to make sure that you stay healthy but have the preparation correct, yeah. going from yeah. one to the next.
Yeah, and I think I really do think, you know, I learned early on from my mother that sleep is the best healer, and so, you know, I get I try to stay away from kind of any pill treatment. You know, I it's great to take my vitamins and to get exercise and to eat well and healthily, but it's true that getting enough sleep seems to be the key. And then knowing how to they call it marking, knowing how to save a little bit of your voice when you're doing rehearsals, especially if I'm going to sing through a scene, but I'm going to repeat that scene again in that same day, I'll choose to sing it out once and then save it a little bit the next time. You know, I always have to be heard by my colleagues and the conductor, but I don't have to give a performance level quality of singing every time I do it. So there are little tricks that you learn to be able to, you know, get the work done that needs to be done, but also protect your instrument just a bit, because ultimately, you know, I have to perform the performances, or it causes so many problems for the company. It causes problems for me. You know, that's when you get paid is right. if you sing the performances. And so, right. you know, I have been fortunate to be able to consistently perform even when I'm sick. I've definitely sung. I sang Rosina with almost no voice. I would wake up in the mornings and have absolutely no voice because I had such a disastrous cold that was affecting my larynx. But I, you know, had to be patient and steam a lot throughout the day and do the kind of concoctions with ginger and lemon and honey and so on. Things that you know, the singer tricks, things that we have to help soothe the throat, and luckily with good technique and just kind of careful pacing, I was able to perform every one of those performances. And that's a lot of singing, and it is a big challenge, you know, it's the reward is huge.
Absolutely.
Getting to do it is amazing.
What's up next on your schedule?
I go to upstate New York with the orchestra now, and I sing Stravinsky's Requiem Canticles. It's kind of a contralto solo in that piece, and then I get to go to York Symphony and sing Alexander Nevsky, which I've done before in Atlanta, and I get to do it a second time here at York Symphony. That's in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And then I've got a couple things in the works for this summer, another couple of Russian pieces. I haven't signed the contract yet, so I don't get to say that, but that'll be in the summer, and that'll be fun. And then I get to some things that are closer to home. I get to go to Madison Opera I think it's February of 2019, and sing my first Charlotte in A Little Night Music.
We may have to try to spread the word, because Madison is so close by. It would be fun to get a group to go up there. Short of making a trek to see you in Madison or one of your other locations, how can listeners hear your performances?
I've got one recording that I did. It's this composer named Joseph Sommer, and it's called The Tempest. It's a Shakespeare story, and he wrote an opera. Joe Sommer wrote an opera called The Tempest, and so there's a really fun role that I play, Ariel, in that opera, and you can find that on Amazon. You can buy an MP3 and get it that way. You can always look me up on YouTube. I have little clips out there. I'll tell you,
We'll put a link to one of the YouTube audios on our website.
Wonderful.
So listeners could hear, because you really have a spectacular voice.
Oh, thanks.
It's amazing. And lastly, what would you say to a young person who's considering a career in opera performance? Would you have any words of advice for them?
Yeah, I think what I had to discover over time is that the things that I really like doing, my thing is I love singing in English. I love singing in English. I love singing really crunchy music that's hard that nobody else likes singing. That's kind of my niche. And so over years, I tried to be what everybody else thought I should be as an opera singer. But ultimately, where I ended up is doing the stuff that I love. So I think if you're a young singer, figure out what you really love performing and what you really are good at, that you always get the good feedback from, and put a lot of time and effort into that music. I mean, we have to learn the languages, and we have to, you know, do all the, we have to go through the hard work of preparing ourselves in you know, through schooling, but discover what you what really gives you life, what really makes you happy, and that's where I think it's best to put your emotional energy into focusing.
Great advice.
Could I say one more thing?
Absolutely. Sorry.
Also, what I have learned is music theory. Learn how to sight read. Learn how to, pay attention to that when you're being taught that in school. That is essential. That makes you so hireable in any situation. It's difficult to be an opera singer and try to get consistent work all the time as an opera singer. And so you have to fill in the gaps by jumping into last minute gigs. I have done so many workshops doing modern music where I got the job, you know, at the last second, a week beforehand, and I had to cram and learn that music. And you can't always find a pianist to teach it to you. So the more skill that you have on your own is essentially that will make you jump out in front of all other singers always. Oh. So that's huge.
Catherine Prock, thank you so much for talking today.
Thank you, Carolyn. It's a great pleasure to talk to you.
This has been Carolyn Martin, Talking Art in the Quad Cities for WVIK.